You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today we're really honored again to have a special guest with us, Dr. Gregory Yang. Last time he was on, we started our conversation about our healthcare system and specifically the treatment of cancer. He is the medical director of institutional research at the Yuma Regional Medical Center and a pioneer, really, in the advancement in the treatment of cancer, not only the techniques, but actually how it's set up. And I know, Dr. Yang, thank you again for joining me. You know, I think one of the things that people are struck with, and I certainly have been, is the complete explosion of cancer in our country. I remember the breast cancer rate being like 1 in 14, 1 in 15. Now it's down to 1 in 8. Colon cancer is one of the major cancers that are found in younger people. There's something definitely going on in our country. And I wanted to get you back on so you could explore and actually discuss in more detail the direction that we're moving in. I mean, we talked about how primary care doctors could be used as the front line of treatment. And I think that's an excellent idea since it's all hands on deck at this point, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Not only all hands on deck, they're moving up on the flow sheet on the participation and the eventual treatment and prevention of cancer. So, yeah, it's more than just the hands on deck. It is for primary care. They are now in a position to be the midshipmen and the junior officers. It is that mm-hmm. much of a change going to occur, you know.
Now, is this starting from the residency level or after someone's graduated and have their own practice? How are you, educating primary care doctors to become more of the treatment options?
There are several things that are happening. The important thing that has happened recently on the database is that, again, we are trying to catch the cancer as early as possible, and that means having better diagnostic testing for screening. And two, we have to be more astute at picking up the patients who are going to be given closer scrutiny of during their lives in looking for cancers that are at high risk. So the residencies now are starting to do that by intensifying the knowledge base of genomics so that the new doctors coming out will have this. But what is also important is that you cannot just do that right up front and be able to do a lot. You have to have the clinical experience. And so this is one of the things that we are doing here in Yuma as well as other places in the country, that we are trying to work with the primary care doctors that are out there now who are, if they had enough time to be able to do this, is that they have the clinical knowledge. We let them know and teach them genomics, and then let them be part of our large consortium of doctors who are participating and sharing data. And this is what's going to give us the answers to a lot of the questions. The genomics part is just the beginning. Like I mentioned in the other meeting that we had, the other talk that we had, was that there are going to be other components like the microbiome, you know, epigenetics, things that happen in the environment that may cause certain mutations to be activated that were never thought to be part of the disease, but because of the exposure to the environment, they become active. Now, this is the part that we have no access to information to, but if with proper planning. There are already people who are planning on doing genetic testing and whatever testing that is needed to start seeing the changes in the patient's physical and genetic as well as chemical base. They take testing every 5 years so that they can see the evolution of changes, saying, you know, this patient is doing really great. He's at age 45, and at whatever age, they'll have another patient showing that, you know, we're beginning to see changes since the patient was 25. He is now 45. I think these are the diagnostic screening tests that we should be giving the patient. This is complicated stuff, mm-hmm. but I don't think it is beyond the most of the American medical population be able to do this. And we are going to be changing what is going to be expected of them in the primary care level before the disease comes, whether it's cancer or other diseases.
Well, you know, just most people will, actuaries are going to start to ask the question of cost to do this, you know, preemptive testing and population-based medicine. How much money do you think that's going to cost? I mean, I think it will bring the price of everything down if people don't get sick, obviously. But we know how the medical system works, and the exorbitant costs for these genetic tests have been kind of crazy. I remember the one for testing for uterine cancer, and it's really prohibitive. What do you foresee will happen, or has it already happened? Has the price of testing come down?
Well, you know, let me tell you something about some populations that have done something about this. There are researchers in Israel who are going to be able to do germline testing for less than $50, maybe $10. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We are now paying $450. A very good test is $450. 2003, it was $110 million. That's a significant drop. So the cost for this will be the interpretation, not the test itself. $10. So, you know, I'm not worried about that part. It's the interpretation and having the doctors who are willing to go through this. So they're going to have to learn some skills that are not actually accepted, or at least have one practitioner in a primary care office, assuming there are several primary care physicians in one office that is already going to be trained in looking at the data as well as on the patient, as well as being a clinician. Second example I have is that, you know, if you get a chance, there is a paper that was written a couple of years ago that is called Our little genetics clinic in the Plains. This is an incredible story about the Amish people who, around 2011, started a genetics lab because they were having too many diseases with the exposure of recessive genes that were coming out, you know, having one or five children with the same metabolic problem. So what they said is this, because they don't take insurance from what I understand, is mm-hmm. they set up the lab on themselves, and they gathered patients, Amish patients from all over the Northeast area, you know, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Ohio. And what they did was they said, we're going to start our own clinic. We don't use electricity, so we use solar panels to run our lab. It cost them $1.25 million to set it up. As of last May, they estimated that they have saved $20 to $25 million in the fees that would have occurred if the patient turned ill with the diseases that they were able to circumvent early, and hospitalization, lab emergency room visit from $1.25 million investment to a $20 to $25 million savings for their community. The most important thing about this is about that study was that they showed for the first time what the community could do on its own to help itself and find ways of doing it when there were no nobody interested in helping them, you know?
Yeah, I do. Hey, on that note, we have to take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Understanding health insurance is becoming more challenging. If you currently have insurance, you've probably noticed that it costs more to see your doctor. And if you're able to keep your doctor, it takes longer to get an appointment. The bad news is, this trend is projected to continue. Your costs will likely continue to rise, while your healthcare choice and access will continue to fall. The good news is, Peachtree ENT Center has the answer to this problem. We believe in taking care of the whole patient, because healing is more than writing a prescription. We are committed to working with you, and we specialize in providing affordable care for patients without insurance, those who are underinsured, and those with high deductibles or catastrophic coverage. And we offer same-day appointments. You no longer have to choose between staying healthy and paying bills, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Before the break, Dr. Yang and I were speaking about the innovative way that people can band together, create their own system using a cash basis, and have it be extremely affordable. And in during the break, we were having a conversation about how I was a little bit dubious that that was going to be able to be duplicated in a system where the hospitals are the centerpiece. As we both know, Dr. Yang, only 30% of doctors are independent at this point. Most have either joined or gone out of business or either become employees of hospitals. And I asked in the break the question to you that I just don't think they don't control their charge master for doctors who are employees of hospitals to give this kind of discount and to make it cost-effective. I just didn't think it was going to happen. And then he said the magic word. It's not the people who work for the hospital. It's the people who are independent. Let me let our listeners know what why you say again. I mean, I've talked to them about it, but I want your opinion on why an independent doctor would be the way to go and not a hospital-based one.
But, well, the first thing that that has happened, again, is the drop in price of genomics and all these other testing that are leading our understanding into the development of disease. It has to be at the primary care level. You know, it cannot be, we cannot ignore that we must do something about getting these changes that are occurring. So that has never happened before. Now, the price of drop of doing that testing is going to make that information available. The information will be there. For example, you have a patient who goes to a primary care doctor's office saying, you know, I'm perfectly fit. You've been following me for many years. But I just found out that my two sisters have breast cancer, and they are both positive for the BRCA gene. What are my risks that they want to know? They turn up something with that patient, all of a sudden they have now a responsibility of trying to prevent the disease by instituting the diagnostic test at this point or giving him a medicine that prevents the disease. They have never had that before, and they must think about it. It is not going to go away, because those patients who go to a practice that is attuned to this, so that instead of a patient going there and saying that, the patient is going to be asked, are there any new cancers in your family so we can get to work on it? That's the kind of thing that I want to see, and I believe is going to happen, where a patient demand will be offered in the next 5 to 7 years that they take into serious consideration taking big chunks out of the disease progression or disease development to prevent it from occurring, because they are attuned to looking for it. You know, it is going to be far more cheaper. You look at the payers. The payers now are beginning to direct a lot of these processes. Where a patient, if they go to a local hospital, they would pay up to eight times more than what is being charged by somebody else. They're going to start directing this thing. We're not crazy. This medicine or this procedure being done by a smaller office is much, much less than what has to be done in a hospital with such a high overhead charge. So they cannot ignore it. The benefits are there. So saying, well, who can do this well, and who can make sure this continues to follow? It'll be at the primary care level of the people who are doing this.
I hate to play devil's advocate on you, but it's happened to me and every ENT doctor who does surgeries in their office now. The insurance companies actually are not that fast to be efficient and to be to think outside the box. They would rather at this point pay hospitals more money and then have the mindset, or at least tell the patient, that we're saving you money by using the big-ticket item, the big-ticket location. They don't think in that terms. I've had conversations, written letters, that it would be a fraction to do sinus surgeries in the office, and insurance companies still won't cover the procedure in the office. I hope that you can make some headway in that, because they're not patient-friendly. They're not patient-centered. They're all about keeping themselves relevant, in my opinion. And if you really think about their mindset, they're only relevant when the cost of healthcare is high, because it has the fear factor tied into it that the patients will need them. That's their only goal, is to be needed, is to insert themselves into the mix. I agree with you. I think that if patients and procedures and everything moves to the lower level, the doctor's office, the primary care office, that we can take control of the healthcare dollar for our patients, it'd be a heck of a lot cheaper. I think that we need to be on the forefront of that and not depend on the insurance companies to get involved. I think that they are working against both of us. That's my opinion on it. What's yours?
Well, that's fine. So what does it take to have patients become part of the insurance company?
Yeah, well, good luck with that. I mean, I just think insurance is not the answer. It's self-care.
What the Amish did was they formed their own insurance company.
Exactly.
Okay? They said, nobody's going to do anything about this. We have people who are a very large number of their patients who are not doing well, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they took the bull by the horns and they're getting it started. So what has to happen, again, it will be part of the patient demand that is coming, because we have never had these things happen before that are cheaper. That can be done only by the primary care doctor watching closely over his patient base. I mean, let's change that. It won't be his patient base. It's his family base. He is not supposed to be following only the patient, and he's supposed to be following the patient, family for generations, and working with technology to make sure there is evolution in the data being used. So, I'm seeing bits and pieces of a lot of different programs all over the country that are showing the signs that things are changing for doctors. So we cannot forget that without that doctor-patient relationship, there is nothing out there. And so I think I'm serious about they should be forming insurance companies, and these offices should be, the better offices should be created so that we can do this. So what can an individual do? Sure, well, we set up a program so that if an investment club for practices that do this kind of thing, so that they are augmented, they are able to keep open. You know, people have a way of controlling things. They said, you know, these guys are doing state-of-the-art stuff, but they cannot do it on their own. Let me invest in that office. There is nothing wrong with being allowed to do that, you know, and so that their overhead charges and everything can be taken care of. We have to think about different ways of getting these payments done because the changes have come in the scientific field that the patient should be allowed to take advantage of.
Well, you know, there is an answer, actually, that's already there. What you just talked about, something that could help doctors and have them access a pod. But have you heard about the health sharing ministries? Those are also ideal, avenues that people can explore. Liberty Health Share, Samaritan, MediShare. And I belong to Liberty Health Share. That's something I believe that would be outstanding for our members because it's all about accessing the healthcare system. Using cash, using the patient as the forefront. You know, it's all about the doctor-patient relationship without a monetary attachment. There's no money. It's a nonprofit. So there is nothing that, there's no conflict of interest where it's not about, you know, making ourselves valuable to the patient by keeping everything high, making them need us. It's about the membership. And just what the Amish folks did, that goes on in the health sharing ministries. Maybe you should contact them, get them on board, because that would be one way to actually help people be able to pay for their health care needs and also change the system. Because if we stop paying into this system that's working against us, I believe that's the only way to get it to come to heal, to actually work for us. On that note, let's take another break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call. And I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today. This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock for Medicine on Call. On Medicine on Call, we talk about more than medicine. It's about how to take control of your mind, body, and spirit. Do you have problems with sinus pain and pressure? Do other people smell things that you don't? Have you lost the joy in eating because food just doesn't taste like it used to? Is your nose always stuffy no matter what you do? Maybe you have sinus or nasal polyps. These are generally benign growths that occur from chronic sinus infection or allergies that are either undertreated or have not been treated at all. At Peachtree ENT Center, We specialize in minimally invasive balloon dilation sinus surgery and correction of a deviated nasal septum and turbinate reduction surgery that can be done in the office. We use a state-of-the-art equipment so that you can see the problem. You will be a partner in your care, and together we will decide the course of treatment. We believe in old-fashioned medicine, where we take the time to fix the problem, not just medicate the symptoms. You can rest assured that all options will be offered before surgery is recommended, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Before the break, we were talking about organizations that can empower individuals to take their power back in order to access and actually control the healthcare system and the healthcare dollar. I really believe innovation is going to come from the bottom up, from the grassroots up. And Liberty HealthShare, MediShare, Samaritan, I think these organizations would be ideal, as I said before, to get involved, to encourage their members to look for doctors, primary care doctors like you just described, who will be able to be on the ground floor to actually help the entire family. This is really about prevention on a really intense level. Because you're not, as you said, working with just the patient. You're working with their family members. It's all about, you know, getting a feel for the direction of their health for the entire family in the future. That's the ultimate cost saver, as you described. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I could see it. I've been thinking about this and working with this concept for for about 3 years now. And every day I see bits and pieces like this that all they needed to do was come together and be mm-hmm. able to do this. You know, during the break I had mentioned the National Association of Pastors' Spouses, where they, a ministry group, asked me to give 1 minute medical minute, what they call medical minute, because they wanted their followers, which numbered in the millions, to be able to know the true facts. What was neat about that, and I began a project with them, was that this is the first time I was working with a group that the members were really trusting the people, the grassroots organization, in giving mm-hmm. them the truth and the real thing. So locally in Yuma, they have just beginning this kind of thing for the patients with disparity, because we have one of the largest groups of Hispanics, Americans who are farm workers, economic disparity. There is an organization being formed out called a CHER, the Chair Organization, where basically what they are doing is they're going to help the many small lower groups start doing clinical trials at the grassroots level. They're not part of the hospital. They're not part of a big organization. They will start learning the concept, but in time, they will participate as a grassroots group, but possibly with working with a drug company to develop a new drug just for their population. That's already happened on the East Coast. We are doing it here. There's a concept that this group here in Yuma want to make sure it doesn't happen again, and they want to avoid what is called a quote unquote helicopter organization, which means there's some organizations, they have something to offer, they fly in like a helicopter, land, make a lot of dust, and when things aren't going well, they fly off. The poor people are stuck with that. So the grassroots organizations are banding together and saying, we must stop this kind of thing where, because a new government program has come up, they come in, they don't do anything for us, because mm-hmm. it was too hard for them. We know some of these concepts are good. Why don't we do them ourselves? You know, and that's mm-hmm. both. There's something like this that it's called the group called Patients Like Me, where there are now 500,000 members, where they are able to get clinical trials going, or get genetic data for patients who nobody wanted to bother with because their drug company or the lab thinks that there's not enough of them. But because these guys use the power of the computer, they'll give a set of symptoms and says, who has this? The researchers are telling us that we won't be able to get 20 within the next 20 years, 20 patients, so we can develop a new drug or a new test for the patients who have this disease. And, mm-hmm. and sure enough, in 2 months, they can get 60 to 100 patients like that, you know. Those people have already gone into clinical trials. These are advocacy groups who go into clinical trials with a drug company. The specific one was AstraZeneca, where they, they're very, very proud of what they are doing for their community. These are private groups, private patients, who nobody else is working for them. So they said, we are going to go to the drug company and tell them to help us with this process.
That's pretty awesome. Now, there's two things that people are going to ask or think about. And one is, what about the people who are indigent, people who are on Medicaid? How do they end, or Medicare, how do they enter this system? Because they have a situation where they're locked into government-based insurance. And from my experience, that is the most rigid, the most patient-averse part of our healthcare system that we have. Is there anything to help those folks enter this type of, you know, forward-thinking, novel healthcare system?
You know, if you look at the models, there are two models here. We have the Arizona Border Health Organization. And what that is, it's an organization that is directly gave themselves the responsibility of taking care of the indigent in this area, so mm-hmm. that Medicaid dollar will be maximized. They are the most efficient users of this. For example, if anybody who feels that they are getting sick because of the heat that they have here, they are not sent to the emergency room. This is a grassroots group that has hired doctors saying, you treat them so they don't go to the emergency room just to be able to get fluid. And so mm-hmm. they have small clinics that they give fluid so they don't fall apart. And they send out community workers to go look for those patients saying, give me a call. You know, they have a big bank of telephones that are calling these folks. They're calling these folks to make sure they proactively don't fall apart. You know, it's mm-hmm. like the electricity went out in New York City, and then, but instead of waiting for people to end up in the emergency room, the people here will start making phone calls saying, this is a bank of patients that we have that's going to get into trouble. Mm-hmm. So let's give them a call, make sure they're okay, you know.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
that makes
partnership that is making a big difference. My respect for these folks are incredible. They also work with, there is a group also called Campesino de Fronteras. They're working with the social issues that keep patients from doing their social issues, from maintaining good health care. So the guy, they ask him, a patient, why are you drinking so much? Well, my back is broken, and I really don't have much of a lifestyle to look forward to, so it doesn't matter if I smoke or not. I work in the field, and I hurt my back, and it's over. So they're the ones who make sure that these patients are taken care of so they can do the preventive measures to avoid the like lung cancer, you know.
Well, let's talk about the opposite now. People who are, because I've had friends and have heard of stories where people are, you know, they're working, they're doing okay, and then they get diagnosed with a catastrophic illness, a cancer. And in order to access it, they actually have to give up their home, give up their bank account, really become indigent in order to enter the Medicaid, Medicare system. What do you do for people who are in that catchment? Because those are the people who are working folks who actually have means, and they don't want to lose everything just to get care. It's like you have to decide whether you're going to live or maintain some sort of stability. How do you access, or how do you let those folks know that they have resources? How do you reach out to them, I guess?
You know, I'm trying to work because, you know, I started out in the prevention field, and I knew there are a lot of problems with the current system so that they cannot do that. The only thing that I can say in doing is what we are doing actively right now that makes sense is we're helping develop those diagnostic tests so that they are caught earlier and the procedure will not be a massive surgery, no chemotherapy. We do the genetic things that you shouldn't, you know, this you get them to the right chemotherapy. You set up the systems where you have doctors saying, I know exactly what you must have, and it is not the most expensive medicine that's out there. Or you get them into a clinical trial where, you know, there's one clinical trial we're trying to open up that is supposed to circumvent people who are who have failed the new immunotherapies. Mm-hmm. And now they have another drug that they should put on top of that for people who failed the best thing that we've ever had for cancer. Well, you know, you're not charged for those drugs in being able to do that. These are small matters, but the way the whole system is set up, whether it's with cancer or any other big disease, is that there's a lot of things that are going to go forward and proceed, and it's going to be very expensive to be able to do that. And that's why I'm doing the things that I'm doing in the prevention mode. That's the best that I can say. I'm not going to say that I'm going to have a solution for the patients that are there right now. But
Right. If,
you know, that we're there right now having that problem, the way the system is set up right now, as you had mentioned, is that, the way the system is worked up, well, here's one thing I did think about is this, okay. So who funds these studies so that the drugs become more expensive? Because what they say is we have responsibilities to our investors, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing they do is if you feel responsibility to the investor in charging these high prices to get your gain on your investment, now can something with that be done? So that we don't have to face that. And the patients with that organization, patients like me, they do the clinical research, but then at the same time, because they know they are not after a profit motive, they just want the drug to come out. That's a big change. You can tell people during their lives, again, one of the things they're going to do once they start forming their organization is that they must participate in the process of clinical trials to develop drugs that are cheaper and make the whole system cheaper. It can be done, I think.
Well, on that positive note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Obamacare is failing. We all know that, but you need to know why and what you can do to get us back on the right track. Visit us at ObamacareWatch.org. This is Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. Join us at ObamacareWatch.org.
This is Dr. George from Peachtree ENT Center. We've won patient care awards and have the highest patient recommendations because we believe in practicing medicine the old-fashioned way. Practicing good medicine is based in listening to the patient and making a care plan that is individual. The best medical care is given when there is a strong doctor-patient relationship built on mutual trust and respect. At Peachtree ENT Center, we believe in taking care of the whole patient because healing is more than writing a prescription. Whether you have problems hearing, have frequent throat or sinus infections, from the time you call our office and speak to a real person, you'll be treated as an individual and not as an ailment. During your visit, you will not be rushed and all your questions will be answered. When possible, natural treatments will be recommended to fix the problem. If surgery is recommended, cost-effective, minimally invasive treatment for snoring, sleep apnea, or sinus problems will be offered because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I think that you're on to something, Dr. Yang. If you are like the fuel that can ignite a complete revolution in the treatment of cancer, prevention, really getting to the root of the cost of health care. I mean, we spend so much time and money on treating the disease instead of really paying attention to the problem. And, you know, I talked to a friend a while back about all these marches and putting ribbons on stuff. That's after the fact. Why doesn't anybody ever spend energy on stopping the cause, the root of cancer? And I think that you actually are the person who is working on that. And that's where we need to focus our attention. Now, in the break, I was asking you about another topic which is very dear to me, and that is patient privacy. You know, we have potentially a wealth of genetic information that, you know, people may want to hack, or somehow people lose their privacy in terms of their genetic privacy, and that's kind of concerning to me. And you were telling me that you actually have taken care of that and you have protections in place. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, when I said I took care of, I've taken care of that, I meant there are people who are working on that right now. In Arizona, there is a group working with the state government. It's a group of lawyers who are in tune with the genetics, and they are very much concerned about the hacking issues, and they are they have been working on it for at least 4 years now in making sure that when the explosion of information comes, that this information per patient, the algorithms are put together to make sure that this is minimized as much as possible. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's been around for at least 3 to 4 years now, and what their job is, they know there's going to have to be transferred information from one organization to the next, and they are going to make sure that people are going to be accountable so that a patient's information are not taken out of context or taken illegally. In any manner that they do. So at least the process has started. It's not as if there's nobody working on it. The state of Arizona was smart enough to be able to anticipate that this was occurring. They put the right people to it.
And once the patient gives the genetic information, do they own it at this point or they don't? Who owns it?
Well, that's the point I'm making, is that it is their information. And when, but the thing is, they have to realize something, is that we cannot do anything with improving the disease unless we share the information. And it is, you know, when they first do the genetic testing, like with the people that I work with, they put it in a bank that is accessible to other labs. And what they are, the purpose for that is that the lab that I'm working with is being cross-checked by other labs to make sure that the lab is doing a right, doing a good job. That has to be done. You know, you cannot have an organization saying we don't share our data with anybody. That's an army of one. That's not very effective. So they have to realize that we are working very hard because we do want to share the data, but at the same time, we now are developing stop gaps to make sure that it's not going to the wrong places, you know.
Well, again, I'm not sure you can answer this question, but it just popped into my mind. Is this all privately owned? Can the government come in and ask for this information? How locked in terms of your little research pod, if you want to put it that way, is it locked from outside sources, from the government, from any other entity that's outside of this health-related system that you've created?
You know, it's an ongoing battle now. It's not only with the government, but with if a person wants to get genetic testing done on their own and they did not ask the insurance company to pay for it, does the insurance company have access to the data? And that's an ongoing battle at this point where, you know, some people are not sure which way it's supposed to go, but I think inherently it's the patient's right not to have that spread around, you know.
Oh, absolutely. So you're saying that the insurance companies can get access? Well, hold on a second. They cannot, right?
They can't, you know. So the battle is right now is that they're trying to say there might be changes made in the future where they're going to try to ask to do that. But I think it'll be a very hard issue for them to force through because patients are worried about their privacy, you know.
I'm still a little unclear. Is it a yes or no? Can they get the data if you've tested yourself and you paid for it? Can the insurance company get that data? I mean, by definition, they really will access it because it's on a medical record system, correct?
That's right now, they are not allowed to access that.
Okay. What about the government?
Well, they don't even know it exists. the government right now has so many problems, they don't even know what to do with that information if they have it. They have other things trying to treat diseases have already occurred and trying to deal with it. That this prevention issues, I don't have any evidence right now showing that they are showing any interest in it for now, you know.
Well, let's extrapolate. If we do move to single payer and everything goes on a database that's electronic, potentially, will the government have access to that? Your genetic information?
Well, there's a coin to both sides. Number one is they may annex the entire thing and saying, we're going to do it for free with our lab. Just send blood or the saliva to us, and as you'll be part of the system. You know, if they do anything with that, I don't think there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be denied treatment because of a pathological issue. There's going to be a lot of pathological things. In the majority of patients will find something. It's because nobody lives forever. There's going to be something that's found in everybody. And I don't think there will be any denial. You know, it's very, very difficult to find in a population that doesn't have something. It doesn't make sense. So if you start denying everybody, then you're not going to have anybody to be part of your insurance group.
Well, I mean, I'm not even speaking about denial as much as I'm speaking about this is your essence, you know, what makes you you, and somebody having that kind of information may not even be about healthcare. You know, we can extrapolate a lot of different ways on this. And, I mean, I hate to use the E word, but eugenics does pop up. I'm concerned about what if. Not, you know, you and I both have the right mentality. It's about helping people, but not everybody thinks that way. Let's be honest. We've had a history in our world of things happening that we didn't expect to, and it's all about thinking about not just the positive, but the negative of what we do. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's a very good question I've been struggling with for a long time because, you know, there is definitely that possibility. Let us hope that as we develop these paradigms, that we are equally working towards preventing that kind of problem also, with safeguards to prevent it from occurring. That's the best that I can say at this point. There are just too many diseases that we're dealing with right now that we need to get addressed, and being able to have some kind of insurance, some kind of medical care available. We cannot sustain at the current level of what we're doing. Alternative issues of prevention must be put forward, you know. I agree with you. We must find ways of doing that, and I think the industry will help us to make sure that there are protections set up. Yeah.
In the last few seconds we have, how can people reach you?
They can reach me through the website. You know, I can give you my email address right now. It's gyang@yumaregional.org. We're going through a lot of changes, and the number will probably change. But at this point, that if people want to talk to me, it will be at gyang@yumaregional.org.
Dr. Yang, thank you so much again for joining me. It was a great conversation. A lot of thought is going into what you're doing, and I'm behind you 110%. Thank you again for joining me, and thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
Join me on Medicine on Call.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.